But your clients do it. Like, majority of your clients fight after they meet with you. You just don't know it.
The heart of advice. It's personal. It's pragmatic. Here on the eMoney Heart of Advice podcast, we explore how to navigate both sides to help you take your financial planning practice to the next level. Join us as we speak with financial professionals to learn how they deepen relationships and improve client outcomes. This podcast contains purely educational information, and nothing discussed may be construed as legal, tax, or financial advice. Please consult a financial advisor for any financial investment or money management questions. All views or opinions represented are solely the opinion of the speaker and do not represent those of eMoney Advisor or any of its affiliates or subsidiaries.
Welcome to the eMoney Heart of Advice podcast. Today on the podcast, we have founder and CEO of Bear Tongue Advisors, and honestly, I would say well-known eMoney super user, Greg Fuhrer. Greg, welcome.
Connor, thank you. It's a privilege and an honor to be here with you.
As always, it's great to see you. Sasha and I are super excited to talk to you a little bit about today. Greg, would you mind sharing a little bit about yourself? Just kick us off with the journey, the firm now, your current interests, passions. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and your team.
Yeah, I like to refer to myself sometimes as an accidental business owner. I was never set out, but when I talked to anyone that I grew up around, they always knew I was going to be a business owner. But I started out in the profession on the life insurance side of the business, and I started out at Guardian, and Guardian was one of the seed monies of eMoney. And so that's actually how I started using eMoney. I was coming out of college, not making money and paying for my access to eMoney. And when I was there, I really fell in love with financial planning and using eMoney. And that's where my passion for the profession kind of started, was using that. What I didn't fall in love with was the fact that all the solutions for our financial planning ended up being whole life insurance policies. Not that there's anything wrong with those, but that's not the solution for every single client. So I felt the need to move. And I also was in that situation where my first year I made $6,000 in revenue, but I paid out over $30,000 in expenses. So when that happens, you kind of have to make a different move. I went over to the bank channel for many years, was really blessed both when I was at the life insurance side and the bank channel with unbelievable mentors. And that's really, I think, one of the things that we always talk about, nature versus nurture, and nobody really knows the truth. And I think it's a combination of both of them. But what an impact mentors can have in your life and really what it's done for my career. When I was at one firm, the owner of the firm used to call the CFP license the can't produce license, and you can figure out what that middle part was. And I'm a person of faith, and my faith tradition, there's this guy that was the biggest persecutor of my faith, and he was on this road to Damascus, and all of a sudden he had this conversion moment, and he became the most prolific writer of my faith tradition. And so I call it this road to Damascus moment. Just like he had a chance encounter with God, I had a chance encounter with the CFP. I went and got my CFP not because I wanted to become a better financial planner, because my best friend got it. And how dare him have a higher designation and profession than I did, right? So I got it like just competitively. But that was my road to Damascus moment. While I was in the coursework, I went from being that's a useless designation to I actually now lobby on behalf of CFP professionals for title protection and trying to get it so not everyone can call themselves a certified financial planning professional just because they think that they can, right? So that's really, really kind of how my background was. There was these moments along that. There was these moments, I like to call them my Nineveh moments. In my faith tradition, there's a story of this guy. He was going to this town, Nineveh, and he didn't want to go there. So finally, I throw him over in a boat. This whale swallows up and spits him up in Nineveh. So it's a reference to something you don't want to do, but it keeps coming up. I never wanted to start my own company. I was at a great firm. Compensation was excellent. I wish I had that compensation still, right? I used to have money until I became a small business owner. So the compensation was excellent. The culture was great, but ultimately I had too many clients. And when I went to sit down and do financial planning, there wasn't the ability to take that time. Also, the software was subpar. I wanted, quite frankly, eMoney at the time. It's funny because after I left, they switched to eMoney. So let's get out of those moments, right? So I kept following these moments. And one of those Nineveh moments that was really clear was when I had a voicemail from my largest client. And I had a voicemail from a financial planner at another firm that just had a random financial planning question. I can't make any money. I can't get compensated if it comes to my firm. We didn't have like any type of teaming structure like that. But I instinctively returned his call because what I realized, as passionate as I am about financial planning, I'm more passionate about helping financial planners become better financial planners, because what I realized, much to my other firm's chagrin, I believe you can only work with 250 clients max. We actually believe it's closer to 100, 150. And anytime somebody fights me with that, I could win that math with whatever they say on a bar napkin, because I just use their own words against them. Like, wait, how? So you read something every morning? Oh yeah. You know, do you keep up your C's? Oh yeah. How often do you meet with my clients? Quarterly. Meanwhile, none of them don't, but I just keep writing the math out. I'm like, well, there's only 168 hours in a week. So either you're lying on these numbers or you're lying how many clients you can serve and serve well. So if I want to have an expanded impact, and I believe that we're the fourth great profession. And if you remember back to, I think it was Socrates or Plato, I can't remember who it was back in college, talked about there's three great professions in society. The law profession, which keeps an orderly society. So legal, law, that keeps orderly. Medicine, because it helps us to stay healthy, helps us to live longer. And then there is theology, which is our spiritual, our mind. And with those three great professions, the size can be great. I believe there's a fourth great profession. I believe that's financial planning, because regardless of your race, regardless of your ethnicity, regardless of your socioeconomic status, and any other ways that we see people relegated to some type of group, all of us have one thing in common. We all have to deal with money. Number one reason for stress, number one reason for divorce, and number one reason for suicide is often cited as money issues. So I believe when financial planners get better, we can make our society great. We can bring our underprivileged communities up to greater heights. We can change this country more so than all the other stupid things we do, like care about politics or go into all these things. We can genuinely change the world by financial planning. So that's my background. So I started a financial planning firm so that I could help mentor others the way others have mentored me, so that I can make our community in Pittsburgh stronger. We call it the 412 region based upon our area code, and that's a vision of our company. We believe that when financial planners in Pittsburgh do better work that helps their clients, and we believe if we do that, we could have an impact so great that our community would weep if we close our doors. That's a little bit about me and our firm.
Well, I know that I don't have the geography because I grew up in the Midwest. So I just assume that Pittsburgh and Philly like are like right next door to each other. I know that they're not.
Or that we get along or like each other too, right?
Yeah. I don't know anything about that.
We had a joint football team called the Steagles during World War II, right? The Steelers and Eagles came together. But usually we're pretty big rivals, especially when it comes to hockey and baseball.
Okay.
Yep. Well, by the way, the Flyers haven't won a Stanley Cup since 78 or 76. Not that I'm counting.
We don't talk about them right now.
Okay. Well, Greg, your firm has at least, your firm's 600% growth has been really impressive. And we, in our new advisor proposition for Advisor's Guide, you are what we consider a tech forward advisor. You believe technology is important. And our research really shows that tech forward advisors see significantly better client outcomes than tech adverse advisors. We'll get to technology in a bit, but first we'd like to learn more about like your financial planning process. I heard you just share a little bit about it, 100 clients, 150 clients. We'd love you to share more about that approach to planning, especially when we're talking about that confidential and secure space for conducting money-related discussions with your clients.
I'm going to borrow that term now and start referring to myself as a tech-forward advisor instead of what I always say is I'm a fintech nerd. So I'm going to start introducing myself that way, because that sounds a lot better than fintech nerd, right? I was literally talking to somebody on a plane. They were like, what do you do? They're like, I'm in fintech. I'm like, I'm a fintech nerd. They're like, you know what fintech is, right? I'm like, I do. I do. Anyways, I don't like technology because of the shiny object syndrome. I often get more of that. Like, I like technology because I like the path of least resistance. I like to work smarter, not harder. I'm naturally wired that way to solve problems to make us work more efficiently. Technology is a partner with that. I tend to be an early adopter, not because I'm an early adopter. If you follow, an adopter pattern, right? There's the early adopters. Malcolm Gladwell on Tipping Point talks a lot about the early adopters. I'm not an early adopter from that. I'm an early adopter the when you can make my life easier. So when we're doing our fintech stack, there's a lot of times I'll tell our team that's better software could fit in, a better way of doing it. We don't adopt it because it has to fit in our holistic tech stack and look at the ripple effects. A great example, this is actually when eMoney is doing updates. There are times where there's a better way to build out the technique that we're doing But to do that, I'd have to go back and change all our old techniques and the old way we did it. And so I'll know how to do both ways. And I might say somebody's new user to do it this way, but because of our legacy. So I think one of the things that we look at is technology as a partner. And depending on where you're at in your career, when you start to implement technology and based upon your knowledge, I think there's this relationship where technology becomes a competitor as opposed to a partner. And so what I'm always trying to do is there a way that I can add more value to my clients? Because ultimately my clients can pursue more of their goals and live a more fulfilling life. How, that's where you get that number, that 100 to 150. So if I'm doing that, how do I provide more value to my clients? And technology becomes that partner. The second reason why I would say I'm tech forward is because the reality is your clients are tech forward. If I hear one more planner tell me my clients are 85 or 90 and don't have email, that's not true. My 90-year-old clients have email and they check it. Ask them. Oh, they don't do online. How did they get their social security? It's all online now. Like this lie that like certain generations and this generation does it. By the way, I found that the ones that are, in my personal experience, the generation that's least tech forward is Generation X from personal observation.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're kind of in older millennials are a little bit more like tech leery. I'm a big remarkable guy. I'm an elder millennial. So I was born in 84 and my wife refers to my remarkable tablet as my emotional support dog because I don't go anywhere with it. And people are like, why would you just use an iPad? I'm like, that's too much technology. I don't want that distraction, right? So I think that a lot of times we look at generational, clients all want technology. Show me a client that doesn't use online banking. Show me a client that doesn't have a smartphone. They exist, but you're such a small, minute part of the population that doesn't move the needle and that doesn't drive business decisions. So I think you have to be tech forward because your clients not want it, demand it. And I can't tell you how many clients we've won simply because of our client portal. I want to share a quick story. One of my really good friends was never a client. And I'm very careful which clients, family I take on. I usually refer them out. But he's somebody that understands me as a professional, understands me as a friend. He came to me and one of the reasons why he was complaining, he goes, it's just too hard. My life is too busy right now that I want to have something that I can see everything in one place. I saw one of your videos on LinkedIn. That's what I want. So we go and we end up doing financial planning for him. We're a financial planning firm that happens to do investment management, not an investment management firm that happens to do financial planning. So all of our clients do financial planning, not all of our clients do investment management. So he comes through the financial planning process, then decides to bring over all his assets to make his life easier. Wouldn't you know, the firm that we took him from and the guy called him and was like, hey, why are you leaving? They were switching to e-money the month afterwards. And reason why, part of it was the nail in the coffin of our client coming over because they were losing clients to a client portal. You don't go to someplace for a white glove service. You go there because of what they solve. Businesses exist for one reason, they solve my problems. So you sit there and call white glove, you return my call, but at 2 o'clock in the morning on Friday, when I'm thinking about my finance and I get out of bed, I want to go to my client portal and see it. I want to research you on your website and know what tools you have available for me because I think the thing we're missing, no matter what generation is, everyone wants to do some level of do-it-yourself. They want technology with a human to help guide them through it. You ever got frustrated because you couldn't figure something out? So that's why we do that. And so why we've grown 600%, why we've done that is because we've been very careful about what technology we implement. We use it to make our clients' level of service better, their experience better. So I was in high school, and we had these things called smart boards, which everyone knows now, right? But when I graduated high school, that was a big deal. And I helped write this grant that we got like 6 smart boards. It was a big deal. It was the biggest waste of money I've ever seen. You know why? Because they forced every teacher to use it as part of their curriculum. And they had no idea how to use it, one. And then two, they were just forced using it. So it actually provided no value to us from an education standpoint of view. They were literally taking slide decks and just putting them on there, which was the same thing, right? So one of the things was, are you using technology to say, and we were like, hey, we're telling newspapers, we got smart boards. They literally didn't enhance the educational experience, provide one additional thing. So when you have a client portal, you got to go the next step. When you go and buy a new car, what do? They show you how to use the new features, right? The new buttons. are you walking your client through that experience? What are you doing in the first 90 days of onboarding a new client? That's the existing clients you're onboarding to a client portal. See, they don't, I forget the exact statistic. Somebody can go Google this if you're interested, but it's something like 90% of iPhone users never change a single feature in their iPhone. That's not download an app. It's change a setting, right? Like, oh, I want my snooze or, you know, focus to be during this time or something along those lines. That's what they're talking about. So 90% of users never adjust a setting inside of there because they don't know how. And how many times you go and read a hack in a Wall Street Journal somewhere? Oh, I didn't know my iPhone could do that. Your clients are going to leave you for a competitor. Technology is only as good as it helps me solve my problem. You could give me a Ferrari, but I don't know how to drive stick shift. It's not going to be that great. So I think that's why we've grown is, and part of our growth has come from a merger. That merger became because the other group wanted that tool. They wanted to be able to do that. And I think the last part of why we've grown is we've scaled it. We've done two things. We draw a line of sand, no more clients without a financial plan. If we're CFP professionals, we have to engage clients in a financial plan. Then once we do that, the number one thing I ask people that are investment focused that want to do more financial planning, which seems to be 90% of our profession, right? Why don't you do more financial planning? And the answer is always some way, shape, or form, however they answer, it's a time issue. It's either my clients won't give me the documents and don't see the value because they don't have enough time to do it, or I don't have the time to implement in my practice. I'd rather make $10,000 a year, meet with the client four times at 1 hour, 4 hours of prep, that's 2 hours of servicing, which is 10 hours, then 32 hours to do financial planning and charge $2,500. That's bad math, Greg, but my clients want it, my clients need it, my clients demand it, and then you end up losing that $10,000 revenue at the back door. So what we need to do is we have to find ways to scale that. And so ways we've scaled that is all of us doing the planning the same way. And when you look at any great business model, they replicate it. If I go to Chick-fil-A, every Chick-fil-A has the same chicken sandwich. In EOS terms, we live and die by Entrepreneur Operating System by Gino Wickman, EOS. They call it follow up by all. That doesn't mean you get the same thing. I can choose my chicken sandwich without a pickle on it, but I can't get a burger. And so when you have that target market, so we customize our financial plans for all of our clients, but we have a tool to do the same planning over and over again. That's how you're able to grow it. So you're not going to increase your financial planning till one, you make a line of sand, a belief audit that that's what our clients need and all of your clients. And then two, having a system that you all do it the same way.
Holy moly. There's a lot to unpack there. Well, first off, I'd say, I hope that everybody that listens to this copies some of the stuff that you do. The biggest form of flattery is plagiarism. So I'd say, listen to what Greg's talking about and try and adopt and implement some of these pieces. You talked a lot about technology as being both an engagement tool with clients, as well as it being a valuable piece of scale. And obviously the delivery of financial planning, but I want to kind of separate those and go a little bit deeper into the two spots. So you ended talking a lot about, development of scale by using technology through, you know, I call it personally standardized planning processes. But can you talk a little bit about how you keep track of new features and how you implement them into that standard process and how you, I don't want to say guarantee, but how you build some of that standardization when you have multiple people that are delivering advice and you personally are not included in every one of those planning engagements?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to start off by saying I don't have that figured out. We got to probably figure it out better than 90% of the firms I've seen, but there's no crystal ball, right? There's no perfect way. You know, when you think about the six components of a business, the people component of a business is always the hardest thing. How do you get people to replicate? So many business owners won't let go of the vine, right? They're hanging on the ledge by the vine because they want to be in control of everything. So the first thing you got to understand is nobody's ever going to do it the exact same way you did it. Once you can understand that, by the way, sometimes it means they do it better than you, right? Because they do it the same way they do it. A lot of times, hopefully, they do it better than you. But I think 80% is our goal. So we always tell our team, if as the owner of the firm, as the leader of the firm, more importantly, if everyone makes a decision the same way I do 80% of the time, that's great. If we get to 90%, we're Kodak or Netflix, or excuse me, Blockbuster. If we get to 70%, that means we're not aligned and we don't have a shared common value and visions. How you do that, that's why we're such big believers on EOS and set up the systems and everyone have that same language, having really strong core values that determine everything and making decisions by that. But the other part of this is you're actually asking from a technologist. I want to kind of give that framework there. You have to do those things first, but you have to have somebody that's a champion of everything. So in our firm, I happen to be the champion of e-money because I am a tech forward advisor. We'll start saying now, right? I can't help it. Like if I log in and it says new feature alert, guess what? I'm taking off the next 2 hours and I'm playing with it. And I'm breaking it. Just the way I'm wired. That's why
break I'm tech it. Forward, right?
I want to break it. I do. I go into sample client. I try to break it. I try to be like, how will this not work? How can I screw up the plan? Because by the way, one of my mentors said something in my life, and this is one of those moments in time where time stood still. He probably doesn't even remember. He said it to me in his conversation. He goes, Greg, his name was Greg too, but he's talking to me. I'm talking in third person here because he's wasted to me. He goes, Greg, in all my life, I've learned that the difference between successful people and unsuccessful people boils down to one thing. I'm like, well, tell me, right? Successful people just make more mistakes. It's that simple. You don't learn from your success. You learn from your mistakes. So how you learn software is making mistakes. That's how I learn. So I try to make errors, go in the ledger, see what my errors are. And that's how I learn the software. And that's how I'm able to quickly learn it. So you have to have a champion. So like, for example, I mentioned EOS we use. We have an EOS champion on our team. We have a CRM. We switched to Wealthbox, which has been life-changing for us. Compared to the competitor we switched from, way more expensive, but actually more value. So it's actually cheaper for us long term. And we have a Wealthbox champion that runs that. That's Scott and everything through that. So when you create an expert, because if you try to be an expert at all those things, you can't be. Now, if you're a solo practitioner, that's just part of what you're going to have to do is you have to be all those things, right? So you do. And then you just got to block time and you got to do it, or you need to hire somebody that's a champion to guide you and lead you in those areas. So that's the first thing we do is we get a champion. Somebody you might champion. How do we stay on it? We do a team training every single Tuesday. That's an hour and a half. And that team training, we go over our mission. We go over our core values, right? We're not like Walmart and we're doing a little squiggly thing in the Walmart. We're not that, but we go over our mission. If you don't know what I'm talking about, please Google that or read Walmart's book. It's kind of a crazy thing to do. But we part of that is training. So we train on the software. So we also have standardized principles. So we created a masterclass from start to finish. It's available at no cost to anyone who wants to borrow it. People are like, why have you spent? It's over 40 hours of recordings. I didn't do it for other people. I did it selfishly so that when we bring people on or they have questions, they could replicate it. And so many other firms were calling me, asking me how we did it. So now I just say, here, click on this link, right? And so that takes somebody from start to finish to learn how to do it. So how do you do it? There's a difference. There's things you can learn in life through processes, right? You can put standard operating procedures in place, but other ones you can only learn through experience. There's things in life you can learn through training, and other ones you have to be coached on. And then there's when you put both of them together, it's just like, how do you make a decision to avoid pain or gain pleasure? Guess what? The best way is to do both of them. If I can avoid pain and gain pleasure, you're going to get a sell on that one. So what we try to do is we try to do all that. So how do we do that? We do that. All of our recommendations are on a sheet that are out there. Every one of our assumptions are on a sheet. We have a standardized process that's all codified. And we have our training codified so that we're doing it. But the second part of that is trust but verify. We go and we do sample of all of our reports, just like Chick-fil-A would do a sample of their chicken sandwiches, go around to their restaurants. That's what we do. And the last thing we do is we do what's called a peer-to-peer review. So we actually, for all our new financial plans come in, our team gets together and we actually pitch the plan to our team and all the recommendations. And what that does, it's like getting three doctors to tell you what's wrong with your elbow as opposed to one, but it also replicates it. It also gets our team. Now you might be saying, Greg, we can't pull out an hour and a half to do team training. We can't pull out an hour to do a peer-to-peer review. We don't have enough people on our team to have a champion. And what I would say is you can't afford not to do those things. Just like you got to pay yourself first, because what ends up happening is, in the long run, it saves you more time. You know, if we could all have common language and we all have a common way of doing it, if you run a problem in an e-money plan, we can solve it quicker because we all know what we're inputting it and how we're inputting it. So if you don't put the training up front, when I switched to eMoney, I had eMoney a long time ago. Then I had a time period where I didn't have in my old firm. I took 2 weeks off with no client appointments and played in the software. And that's paid dividends, pun intended, because what it ends up allowing me to do is I can understand the software and those updates now become quickly. Now, you're always got people on a team that lag technology-wise, that maybe might be slower. I mean, that's just the reality of life. And you just got to coach them a little bit more and help them a little bit more, or create paraplanning or other facilities inside your team to take that off their plate if that's not their strength. So we use predictive index on our team. We eat, sleep, live, and die by it. We understand what everyone's predictive index is, and we try to mold them and put them in the right people in the right seats through that and understanding maybe this person might not learn that because not everyone has to be an expert in it.
That's great. I mean, just to echo that back, I mean, it's spend the time, invest the time in the business to create some standards and honestly find people like yourself that are passionate enough in specific areas to that they want to go kick the tires on something and figure out how it best serves them, how it best serves the firm, how it best serves clients. I think it's extremely important. And making mistakes is definitely important, but it's, again, it's finding because you enjoy making mistakes in the system or trying to break it. We'll just assume that you haven't broken anything in eMoney yet. And I do want to switch to, from an internal perspective, that is super helpful. And I think, you know, I was going to offer up the notion that I feel like most advisors that I talk to that are having trouble scaling either planning and or eMoney inside of their planning firms is a lack of time or capacity. And you know, just the idea of people management and adding folks to champion something like that is, it's daunting. And I, you know, I don't necessarily
blame them. Something that just resonated with me. I hear this all the time from, I just can't get anyone to replicate what I do. I'm like, well, where's your procedures? Well, and so there's okay. An old famous saying, if you do something three times, it should be written down. And they're like, but I don't have the time to do that. But you're talking to me right now. You could have in that hour written that. And then you know what they wanted? They wanted to be perfect. We follow MVP 80%, not to be confused with 80%. If something's 80% complete, it's ready to go to market. If you try to get to 100%, you'll never go to market because everything, even 100%, once you go to market, you're going to change. I can't tell you how many times we've changed our operating procedures. The only way to know they're right is by start using them. And then when there's a breakdown, you can fix the breakdown. So it could be as simple as like you can literally in 5 minutes do a five-step. So it's like you're teaching somebody to drive a car. My daughter's not 12, she's 5 and a half, but my 12-year-old daughter's in a car next to me. I'm stealing this from Gina Wickman, by the way. And so the 12, plagiarism is the sincerest form of flattery. And you have a heart attack and you got to get to the hospital. So you now got to teach your 12-year-old daughter. And why I use 12-year-old daughter is because most people are feared by their 12-year-old son or daughter. I have a daughter, so it makes it more real to me, right? So your 12-year-old daughter, I don't want my daughter to drive. Better like increase that umbrella policy. So, you know, you start to worry about this, but I got to get the, so what am I going to do? Like, I'm not going to say 10 and 2. That doesn't even matter. I'm going to be like, big pedal go, right? Like vertical pedal go, horizontal. I mean, 12 years old, hopefully they know what those are. Like right is go, left is brake. Stay between the lines. That's it. So like, what are you going to do? Another way to do this, and Brian Tracy's Eat the Frog, he always talks about, imagine you are leaving for vacation tomorrow. What are the tasks you absolutely have to get done? I got to write the standard operating procedure before I leave for vacation tomorrow. Write it down in 5 points or less. Then you can expand upon it. And then what's even better is once you're expanding upon it, it's because now your team's involved in it. And now they create something better than you could have ever created in your head because they're coming back and you're like, hey, you didn't do this plan the way I said. Well, Greg, in this operating procedure, it said this. Oh, darn, we got to update that. So the excuse is like anyone that's, you know, I'm in debt up to my ears, I'm this, whatever. I don't have enough time to do anything. It's because you're not prioritizing it. You got to understand if you don't control your operating procedures, they will control you. Just like your calendar. If you don't calendar block, you don't control your calendar will control you. You, if I have one employee or more and you don't have your core competencies, 20% of the activities that occur out for 80% of the time you spend, you will never have a scalable business. You have a business that runs you instead of you run the business and you will never be replaceable. The number one thing you should be as a business owner is replaceable.
Which it's just the way of the world because then everybody can, help out the same level, caliber, quality, quantity. And then at the end of the day, I'd be remiss if I didn't say eMoney's mission or vision at least once during this podcast, but helping people talk about money and financial peace of mind for all is, you know, definitely where I think you are headed and definitely where we would like to enable you to continue moving towards. On the flip side of the coin, so we talked a lot about some of the internal ways that technology can support the team, and some of the stuff where I'd say definitely invest the time to set up those standards. But from a client engagement standpoint, I know you talked about the portal. I know that you love the portal. I want to reiterate the importance of building it into the standard process because that's how you end up with adoption. But more broadly, you know, what do you feel like the most valuable piece of technology or feature? And I know that it's difficult to say between client engagement tools versus planning delivery versus efficiency and scale, but if you had to pinpoint one thing today, what would it be?
So it's definitely, so yeah, that's an easy answer for me. I have them in order. So it's definitely client portal number one, right? The interaction. But number two, which would be instead of client portal, is decision center. So goals inside of the client. Like, I wish if I had my ideal world, the first page of eMoney wouldn't even exist in the client portal. Net worth doesn't matter. Your investment balances don't matter. It's your probability of success. That's all that matters to the client. And so decision center on every way, that's the heart of eMoney. That's what the clients, they interact with. All these reports, people don't care. You know, there was a psychologist one time, the FPA annual, this is like 6 or 7 years ago, FPA annual was one of the best speakers I've ever heard. Don't remember her name, but she got up and said, you know, we all hate you financial planners. We're all like, read the room, lady, right? Like, this is all financial planners. You want to know why we hate you? We're like, yeah. And so she shows this picture up there, and it was a picture of Goodwill Hunting with all the math. She's like, it's like going to math class, and nerd alert here. But most people's least favorite course in high school or college was math. And I'm not saying everyone here is their favorite, but it probably wasn't your least favorite if you joined this profession. Now, that's a problem why our profession needs to change is because there's very little math required. The software does all that stuff for you. It's all human interaction, psychology. But that's not Lydia is to say. That's what she's saying. That's how a lot of people feel, right? And it's because financial planners get in front of people and they start showing them equations and charts and the cash flow report. I just want to know if I'm okay, right? So the second thing is, you're like marriage counselors. And there was a picture of a couple fighting. And she was like, you don't understand that probably 90% of your clients have had a fight after your office. She referred to it as pillow talk. She said the 10 minutes before you go to bed, because that's when most people have really difficult conversations. Because if you're mad at each other, you can just roll over and go to bed. Not to mention, we always said we were never going to go to bed angry until we had kids. And we're like, okay, yeah, we're going to do it. We got to get some sleep, right? And I was like, man, she's in my head, right? Like, we do that. Like, but your clients do it. Like, majority of your clients fight after they meet with you. You just don't know it. I know we all think we're great and everyone loves us and we're all sometimes the most arrogant profession I've ever seen in terms of how great we think we are, right, to our clients, and just switch companies. We'll see how good you really are. And then the third part of it is, so she's like, marriage counseling went bad, math bad. The next one, she showed a picture of a dentist chair. And there was a person, she's like, you're like going to a dentist. You got to do it once a year. Meanwhile, I think it should be twice a year, but she's like, you got to go once a year. And quite frankly, we have anxiety going there and we don't want to do it. And we actually hate it, but we only do it so we don't have the pain of our teeth. And so when you really fundamentally understand that that's what clients are, you got to interact with clients and make it so that they can, you're hired as a business for one reason only, solve their problem. What's their pain point? It's not my money grow or beat the market. I just had this prospect this weekend. We call them potential clients. We don't call them prospects, but for sake of people listening, it's prospect. Person came up to me and were like, hey, I want to know about your investment philosophy. I got money with Fisher Investments. I was like, yeah, our investment philosophy is the market does what the market does, and we can't beat the market. But what we don't do investments. We do financial planning. If you need investments, we can talk about that. Why would I talk to you about that? Not to mention, you know, I'm going to give you a form CRS before I go any further in this conversation, right? And so I was like, but let me tell you, you know, really, I've learned that people want typically two things out of their money. Either one, they want an income or future income. And two, they want to get their cha-cha-cha. I always like to do that because they see this lady doing like a little cha-cha-cha. But and then I say, it's your children, church, or charity. And then they get it, right? It just helps them remind it.
I don't understand what they thought. I was like, are we dancing?
It just proved my point, right? It's a talk trigger. Yeah. So if you're not familiar with the term talk trigger, we built our whole firm around talk triggers and things that make people talk about you, right?
Yeah.
And great service, white glove service. If you've ever read the book Iconic, it's one of my favorite books of all time. He talks about like what makes brands iconic, right? It's not, you know, the number one grossing steakhouse in all of America is in Indianapolis, Indiana, and have one location, the number one grossing for one location steakhouse. And they're famous for, in that booming sea town of Indianapolis, Indiana, their cocktail shrimp. So it's St. Elmo's Steakhouse. Why? Because their cocktail shrimp sauce is so strong with horseradish that they actually make it a basement with gas masks on. And it's famous because it's a talk trigger, right? It forces you to talk about it. So the cha-cha-cha becomes one of those things that sticks in their head. We do a lot of weird stuff like that. We make our own bourbon and people are like, what? Why do you make bourbon? It's a talk trigger, right? So moral story here is I'm telling this person, those are the two things. It's either cha-cha-cha or income. Like most people's goal is not just to grow assets. Again, there are always exceptions rule, but they come in focused on growing their assets because they think that's how they're going to get an income, or they think that's how they're going to give to their cha-cha-cha. And so I was like, if those are the things that really matter, I said, what do those markets up and down really matter? Because if you have enough income to manage to do all your goals, does it really matter what the balance is? He's like, no. And I said, and if you give it to your children and there's enough income to do everything they want to do, does it really matter what the balance is? He goes, no. And then I said, why do you care? And he goes, because I was told that's what I should do. I said, that's why we need to talk, right? So I think that that's ultimately, we got to understand what clients want. So we got to like recalibrate clients because ultimately that's what they want. So how do we frame it? So Decision Center, the name Decision Center. So clients, I want help making decisions. It's one of the greatest names. The way it flows, the way that it's structured. And most importantly, that's where eMoney's developing all the new shiny tools. And they're getting it. So they're telling you it's the best part too. So it definitely goes client portal number one, number two is Decision Center. And then number three would be Next Steps. I freaking love Next Steps. That's one of the greatest tools ever. My clients know what that checklist is. I could copy paste an email. They can see in their client portal. I think the biggest mistake we make, white glove service is not how fast you return a client call. It's how well you solve a client's problem. And we get that. I mean, if you ever read Excellence Wins with Horst Schulze, I had the privilege and honor to have breakfast with Horst Schulze. He's the founder of the Modern Ritz-Carlton. And man, he's just one of the most remarkable, not to mention for his age, he's spry. He's in his 80s and he looks and acts like he's 50. But the guy is just a wealth of knowledge when it comes to hospitality. And we just get hospitality completely wrong in our profession. We think it's answering calls, returning client calls, being available on evenings and weekends. That's not what it's about. It's about solving a client's problems. And I think where we fail is the follow-up. How many times we tell a client to get a will, live well, and power of attorney, never follow up? And how many times do we, you know, somebody dies and it's like, oh, I have this trust, but the lawyer never helped me put all the stuff in the trust. That Next Steps, man, does it keep everyone honest and keep everyone on the same page? I could go on and talk about all the different features, but to me, client portal first, Decision Center second, Next Steps third.
My lens is really financial wellness and coming from a financial counseling background. So you're speaking my language when it comes to all this, you know, really solving the client's problem. I do want to like just pivot really quickly because we have seen some remarkable dedication that shines through in support for not only your clients, but your colleagues as well. So we want to know what inspires you and your firm to create communities and really place that education and empowerment of other financial advisors. What makes you do that?
Yeah, I think part of it's just, you know, one of the things when you build a company, your core values, it's really easy for me to live my core values because they're really my personality, right? Like, so we are our client, like our team doesn't get bonus unless they get a plus in all the core values, right? We use EOS, it's called the People Analyzer tool. You know, we're built on core values, but it's easy because that's who I am. Right. It's so part of it's I'm just naturally wired. My wife's always like, there's not an organization you don't want to be involved in. Right. Like, so I learned this one time. I first did predictive index. I'm like, I'm not that. And the guy goes, Greg, have you ever been involved in an organization and not been in leadership? I was like, yeah. He goes, for longer than 3 years. And I was like, well, that hurt. That stings. That really stings. Right. And it's a natural calling. So I think it really comes to my belief that we're the fourth great profession. And so like, ultimately I have a servant's heart. That's just the way I was wired. It's not like it's just how I'm wired. So my grandfather's funeral, when I was 16, they kept saying when the military, or the country was going to fight a war, he didn't wait for the military to call him. He went down to the Navy's office and signed up. He served. And it was like all these things at the end of each line was he served, he served, he served. I remember weeping at that funeral, not just because my grandfather died, but because I was like, he served. He served me. And that's what I aspire to be. I want to be remembered for serving others. And so when you believe wholeheartedly in our profession. Like, you look at the greats of sports, like the ones that are iconic, like the Michael Jordans, the Sidney Crosbys, the Mary Lemieux. There's no Flyers in there. You know, the greatest. I gotta get caught in that. But honestly, like Tiger Woods, like the people that become iconic in their sport, the Wayne Gretzky's, you know, the Roberto Clemente's of the world, the people that transcend their sport, they don't just have God-given talent. They hire coaches. They work harder. They're usually the first person to practice, the last person to leave, because they believe in greatness. I believe in our profession. And when you truly believe in this profession that changes lives, you can't help but be devoted to this profession, because I can only help out 100 to 150 people. Whether that's 150 financial planners that help 150, okay, I've multiplied it so I can have a better impact. Because that's my true why, by the way. So my impact is what motivates me. That's my motivator. So if I have a bigger impact, that's what I procrastinate. I procrastinate things that can't have a bigger impact. You asked me about a podcast. I want to know how many people reach that podcast to the right people, my target audience, so I can have a bigger impact, right? So it's about that impact. So when you start getting motivated by that, and you start to realize that financial plan is the key to make our country better, to make people's lives better, the only way to do that is to make our profession better. I don't want to grow this multinational company. I want there to be tons of competition. I want access to financial planning to be for every single person in America. And the only way to do that is to make all our firms great. But I also believe in the power of niching. So we have a very strict target market, and we don't deviate from that. By the way, our number one referral source is financial planning companies, because they know our niche and they know it's different than their niche. And so we don't have competitors. We don't believe in a competition. Every one of my ideas, I will share freely every idea. I can't tell you how many firms use our e-money recommendation sheet that we have, or that you use e-money the way we use it. We're constantly doing our e-money tip of the week to empower the firms, because ultimately that's how we have an impact. That's how our society grows greater. So I believe the best way to do that, if you're a CFP professional, by the way, is to be part of the Financial Planning Association. That's the community for CFP professionals, right? NAPFA is not the community for CFP professionals. All these other ones, NAFA's for insurance people. FSP is great if you want to network. But if you're a CFP professional and you're not in the association that's for you, and you don't want to be part of that community, how do you become better? Another connection all those greats have, they know the other greats. Game recognizes game. Right? I remember when Kobe Bryant passed away, and all these other people were talking about all these stories about Kobe Bryant that they knew him, right? Because they talk, right? LeBron James is like texting these guys. They're in the NCAA tournament. They're mentoring and developing, because great people want to mentor and develop the next generation. If you're a small business owner that doesn't want to develop the next generation, please get out of our profession. Retire already. You're taking up space. If you are in your 70s and you're still in this profession and you're not in the profession to help clients, and more importantly, to help the next profession, we have a gap coming up. You have an obligation to your clients. You have an obligation to your community. You have an obligation to your country to mentor the next, develop the next generation. And that's why I'm doing it, because ultimately that's what brings me happiness. There's the hedgehog effect. If you're not familiar with the hedgehog effect, you can go and Google it. It comes from Good to Great. And you Google it. He has it on his website. It's really easy to get it. But it's the sphere that comes together. What are you really passionate about? But what are you also really good at, right? And that's what it is. I'm just extremely passionate about this profession, because the impact this profession can have on lives, and that's why we do it.
And good at.
That's thanks. That's right. I'll take that, Connor.
I know Connor has one last question, but I just want to say, you know, I really resonate with that, because I run our continuing education program at eMoney. Don't know, you've probably seen my silly face on there, but you know, that's something that we are really passionate about, is making sure that, you know, the hundreds of advisors who come hear our thought leadership and are able to take that away. So I can really resonate with that. Thank you.
Well, one other thing I should have mentioned here, this is something that really hit me. I was at a conference last year. I can't remember which one it is. I'm a conference junkie, right? Cause I always want to get better. And somebody said to me, if somebody was at a dinner party you're at and they didn't know who you were, right? Or like, didn't know you were there, excuse me. And they said to somebody else, you overheard it, who's the best financial planner in our city? If your name is not uttered, it might not say like, oh, they might say three names or four names, but if your name's not in that conversation by at least one person, how does that make you feel? And if that doesn't make you feel like you want to get better, get out of our profession. That's not what you're passionate about. It's a job, not a vocation to you. Would you want to go to a surgeon that doesn't love this? You could have such a ripple effect on people's lives. You could change people's lives for the good, or you could change it for the worse. Get out of our profession if you don't want to change people's lives. We are a noble profession. We're the fourth great profession. Get out of there. So that, to me, you got it. So how do you become great? The great ones have to learn from other ones. You have to have community. We weren't designed to do life alone. We can't solve all the problems. The amount of communities I have between advisory boards and leadership groups, and I'm constantly reflecting off other people and learning from those other mastermind groups of other financial planners, stealing their best ideas, because when I steal their best ideas, my clients get better. And so that's that need and desire. So I wanted to leave that question for somebody out there that I tell to our team all the time. If your answer, you're not one of the names shared out there, how does that make you feel?
Whew. Connor. Powerful.
And you can feel the passion. I won't spend too much time on it, but I do think it's super important. And it was kind of an undertone to most of our conversation today of how important it is to understand what your why is. While this, most of what we talked about is implementation of technology and financial planning and the impact it has on your clients, you're only able to do it as successful as you are for yourself, and understanding your why and your values and how those align with your business, with your clients, and why you're doing and who you're helping. I'd say definitely we talked about spending time. I would also spend time and look in the mirror and understand kind of what you're doing and why you're doing it. But as it pertains to this discussion, Greg, I want to leave you with our final question, which is how would you define Heart of Advice when it comes to financial planning?
Yeah. So I think, honestly, we get this really wrong in our profession. Advice is not defined by any type of success metric or numeric metric, in my opinion. So our mission statement at Baratung is to educate and empower clients to pursue their goals and live a fulfilling life. That to pursue their goals and live a fulfilling life is also part of our why, right? So our why is different than our mission statement. But I think ultimately that's all firms that are doing financial planning. It's about creating change. So often we get this high and mighty on, like, it's a lot of times to see it with the fee schedule, right? Like, oh, do you charge a flat fee, or you fee only, or fee based, or whatever, right? That's not the right F word. The right F word is fiduciary, not fees. All different fee models work. That's from the CFP and ethics. If you take the CFP ethics, they'll tell you that's straight from them, right? The F word's not fee, it's fiduciary. Or it's, I don't believe in this type of, it's funny, the people that believe in permanent life insurance typically are paid commissions on permanent life insurance. The people think it's evil are typically paid advisory fee. Who's in the middle? Who thinks it could be a right thing and a wrong thing, right? Everything's villainized and you just follow the bucks. Like, so often it was like, I'm fee only and I only charge advisory fee. And then they don't know anything about annuities. You get Fisher out there saying annuities are always wrong. What do you do for somebody like my mom that can't handle a single downturn, needs income for life, is a spendthrift? I would love to see that solution. You put her in the markets. I think you should go to jail if you put my mom in the markets. Like, that's how I feel. Like, it doesn't make sense. So it's like, because it's all the wrong thing. Financial planning is about solving people's problems. It's about changing their current lifestyle and habits to get to their future goals, whatever those future goals are. I'm not supposed to tell somebody to rent or to own based upon what's a sound financial principle. I'm supposed to tell them what to rent or to own based upon achieving their goals in life. Stop telling people, one of my favorite professional always says, don't shoot all over them. You should do this. You should do this. You should do this, right? That's Amy Florian. And I think we should all over our clients all the time. You should. No. Like, if let's human behavior. Let's understand. Like, I like to give a great example of this. I like custom tailored suits because they actually save you money in the long run. And you get cool things like put your logo inside of them. I don't know if you can see that in there. I love that, my logo in suits, right? So I'm with this tailor. So I like to put a predecessor, because when I say I go have a tailor, people are like, oh, it actually saves me money. But so I'm with this tailor, and he comes in and goes, Greg, I need you to talk to my sister. And they, by the way, there's a lot of financial planners that use him in Pittsburgh. I go, what's up? He goes, she's just really foolish with her investments. I said, okay, well, tell me what's going on. He's like, well, she has all of her money in CDs. I said, okay. Is she saving a lot of money? He's like, oh, yeah, she's frugal. I said, so what's wrong? He goes, well, she should have her money in CDs. I'm like, why not? He's like, well, you just shouldn't. And I was like, if she's willing to forego and understand the consequences, like if I have to save three times as much as my friend that's not in CDs and I'm willing to do that, and that's what lets me sleep at night, who cares? Stop forcing somebody that wants that and it's something that we think it's the right thing. Cause if not, everyone would all be in a 100% equity portfolio. Like we say that you should be in somebody's risk tolerance, but then we say that, oh, their risk tolerance is actually only two portfolios or three portfolios. What about somebody that doesn't want to, part of why I don't believe in the AUM model is your primary driver. What about small business owners where all their money's in their business? They don't get advice. Like, you know, not everyone needs traditional investments. If you're really good at real estate, then do real estate. But if I only get paid on investments, I'm somehow changing their lives by getting them out of real estate, put them in what makes me money. So ultimately, the heart of advice is about understanding your client's goals and giving them whatever tool. I tend to think Decision Center and eMoney is the best tool to explain to clients. But if you think another tool is better, it doesn't always have to be the extreme comprehensive. It's ultimately meeting the client where they're at, because the mark of success and why I believe in financial planning is a client is able to pursue their goals and live whatever they define as a fulfilling life. Not that they had mathematically the best plan, not that they were optimized, but that no matter what happened, we helped create them a plan to pursue their goals and live a fulfilling life. That's the heart of advice for me. And I found eMoney's best tool. And that's why I'm passionate about it, because that's where I can make that conversation and take the abstract numbers and things that people don't like, the math they don't like, and package it in green, red, and yellow, and help them make informed decisions instead of making decisions they're going to make all day long without being informed.
It's powerful. I do want to just have you, for anybody, either for your masterclass or if anybody has any follow-up stuff for you, do you want to just throw out a way for folks to get in touch with you?
Yeah, the best way to get in touch with me is honestly LinkedIn. We also have an eMoney tip of the week that comes out every Tuesday. So they're less than 10-minute tips on how to do. We have our masterclass, they're both on our website. Our website is Baratung Advisors. That's Bravo, Echo, Romeo, Alpha, Tango, Uniform, November, Golf. It's a German word for advice, guidance, and counsel. Advisors is with an O. You can just Google my name. It's Greg Furer, F-U-R-E-R. You're going to find me on LinkedIn. They screwed our name up in Ellis Island. We don't have an H, so I'm pretty easy to find inside of there. But that's the best way to connect with us. We do release our tips of the week and our masterclass through our LinkedIn. A lot of our LinkedIn content, honestly, is focused on financial planners because we want to make this profession great. If there's any way that I can help you become better, because I believe we're a noble profession. When financial planners become better, the whole world gets better. If I can help you any way to have a greater impact, then I'm doing why. My why is I serve God by serving others, and I would be honored to serve you. Connect with me on LinkedIn, and I would love to help you any way I can.
I'm going to should on everybody that's listening right now. You all should reach out to Greg if you have any questions.
I appreciate you guys. It's been an honor and a pleasure, and I just want to give a heartfelt thank you for all that you guys do to enhance this tool to make me a better financial planner, because if the team of eMoney is not constantly updating and enhancing this tool, then I don't have the best arrows in my quiver to have the impact I need to have. So thank you for everyone at eMoney. Keep up the great work. I'm really excited about the roadmap for the next 2 years. I believe the next 2 years is going to make this tool jump ahead of its competitors in a way it's never had before. So thank you to each and every one of you.
Thank you. Greg. We've enjoyed having you on, Greg.
The Heart of Advice podcast is produced by eMoney Advisor, a leading provider of technology solutions and services that help people talk about money. Learn more at eMoneyAdvisor.com, where you can find additional resources for advisor success, including the Heart of Advice blog, as well as eBooks, CE webinars, and events.